Welcome to The Whole Marketer, where we look at the holistic skills, the technical skills, soft skills, leadership skills, and personal understanding that marketers of today need to grow the brands and businesses of tomorrow. We're here to ensure that marketers feel supported and empowered to have successful and fulfilling careers and lives as a whole. Hello, and welcome to The Whole Marketer podcast. This episode is brought to you by Tracksuit. I'm passionate about marketing effectiveness, setting smart objectives and KPIs to help us answer the all-important question, is what we are doing working? The sponsors of today's episode support marketers and agencies to find out. Tracksuit's beautiful, always-on brand tracking dashboard makes brand tracking affordable, accessible, and easy to understand. They survey thousands of people around the world to give you full visibility on your brand's health with insights updated every day. Check out gotracksuit.com and request a demo from the team. Today's topic is representation. And it's a skill that sits across our technical ability as marketeers, our personal understanding, but also the importance of building diverse and inclusive teams across soft and leadership skills. Shortly, I'll welcome today's guest, Nishmar Patel Rob, onto the podcast. But before I do, let me tell you about why we're discussing representation today. Representation is the depiction in media, literature, art, or other forms of expression of particular groups and communities that are portrayed in society. It affects how the individuals of groups are depicted and how we interpret them within society, but also impacts the individuals within those communities and the importance of making sure they feel seen and heard. As marketers, we need to face into what we don't know and understand about these communities and groups, especially for those that we're not part of, so we can accurately communicate and connect with these different groups and communities. And the importance of this as marketers, as what we communicate will influence the perceptions, beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors of others towards these groups. Today's guest is Nishmar Patel Rob, who is a creative marketing leader and passionate advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion. Her experience building human-centered campaigns at Google, coupled with her expertise in inclusive cultures and the intersection of tech and social good, make her a sought-after voice. As CEO and founder of The Glitter Sphere, Nishmar empowers female creators, leaders, and entrepreneurs to collaborate, elevate brands, and drive meaningful cultural change. She's also working on a project to address the lack of South Asian representation in media and advertising in the UK. In addition to this, she serves as president of WACL and the History of Advertising Trust and holds fellowships with the IPA and the Marketing Society. We're not shaping the future of marketing. You'll find her geeking out on creativity in Pinner with her teens and pups or bringing the energy as a DJ. Nishmar, welcome to the Whole Marketer podcast.
Thank you, Abby. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you.
So as always, we start with a big, juicy question. And today's big, juicy question is very juicy. What is representation to you?
Well, representation has a particular meaning for me, but I'll share with you what I think it really means for our industry and then talk about why it's so important to me. I think representation in its truest sense is a reflection of the world around us, and seeing all aspects of all people being represented. So not necessarily just the obvious physical markers of gender or ethnicity, but also some of those other aspects of perhaps someone's sexuality or their neurodiversity, or just actually the way we may have different life stories and upbringings. And so for me, representation is ensuring that we work harder to not necessarily just always surround ourselves with the people who may look like us, sound like us, live in our bubble and our world, but actually to work harder at finding those that may challenge, complement, in some respects, kind of really enhance our understanding of the world and the kind of different perspectives in it. So representation for me is that real sense of mix and fluidity that I think is kind of natural for our world. Personally, for me, representation has always been, I think, something that I felt very passionately about. And I say always, actually, I say probably the last 20 years of my life, certainly the first 30 or so, was spent probably suppressing my identity in every sense. So as a South Asian woman, the youngest of three girls, brought up in the 1970s and 80s in the UK, you know, born in Watford and lived here, I've gone through suffering extreme an awful racism, sexism, classism, kind of everything you can imagine and more. particularly when I was younger, but actually my own personal resilience to kind of ignore it and just push through is definitely what carried me for the first 30 years of life and career. And I think also not just an ambivalence, but a desire to suppress and be just the same as everyone else. Interestingly, just wanted that normalization. But an awakening around the exhaustion of what being someone that you're not can feel like, and carrying that mask continuously, led me, and particularly I think actually once I had my children, I really stopped and evaluated, and I just wanted to be who I was, celebrate the culture, the background, my likes, interests, all of the norms that I think are so heavily forced upon us, particularly as women, even from what I chose to wear to work or the passions and interests I might have outside of work. I just wanted that idea of, you know, turning up as your true authentic self is certainly a more modern thing and is still being defined, but I think it liberates people to be who they are. So I am on a mission to make our world as representative as it can be, so that all different types of people can be seen in the world around them and can be accepted for who they are and appreciated, that we lean into curiosity. And no greater place than doing that as part of marketing. You know, it's also, most importantly, has incredible commercial value. So the more that we reflect the reality of the people that we're trying to reach, unsurprisingly, the more successful businesses are, because you resonate and connect. And so it's important for people's mental health, seeing themselves in their world and the self-worth that they may have and a sense of belonging. But it's also really important from a business and commerciality, both in terms of customers and success, but also in terms of attracting the right talent.
As I'm listening to you, there feels like three elements as to why representation is so important to you. One is a personal one, the ability to feel that you can be your true authentic self, unmasked, a desire to not be suppressed. There's almost the mission element around making sure that all of communities are represented and seen. And then there's the double whammy benefit of that, both the commercial benefit for marketers, but also one where they also feel represented and seen and feel empowered to be themselves. Tell me why you think that's so important.
I think for businesses and particularly marketeers who effectively kind of hold the pen on defining how a brand is seen and represented and connects with customers, there's a value in a way that I think we build trust with brands, the way that we build loyalty and love for them. And a lot of that comes through the connection of our understanding of people. So I think when brands are able to authentically connect with customers, and I think I stress the authentic because we have been through an era, and potentially still are in an era, of tick boxing and performative actions around representation versus the actions that are authentically delivering either authentic portrayal or considering, and it's always so obvious actually when you see the makeup of teams, when people really consider how do their teams reflect broader society. And I think the reality is, as I say, you know, come back to that key point around brand connection, brand loyalty, really considering actually the listening and attention that you're paying to your customers. You know, how many businesses have talked about being customer first? And I'd often look at what they're doing. Do they really understand their customers? And are they really, truly reflecting them? Or are they often reflecting the boardroom or the teams that work on them? But the businesses that are listening attentively to their customers and interested in knowing more about their lives or reflecting them, I think are the ones who are able to innovate and are able to keep pace with changes in society and behavior that allow a business to grow. And the reality is our population is changing. You know, you can extrapolate a number of years out and you look at the proportion of the UK population that will be of mixed ethnicity, the awareness around neurodiversity, the acceptance and more recognition of people choosing identity from a sexual point of view. And the list can go on. And I just think that that piece around not trying to force demographics, you know, gosh, you know, the amount of times we still plan, don't we? How many businesses still continue to plan and do around age old, 18 to 34? Most people have scrapped ABC one, some people haven't. It's impossible to fit people's identity into these broad categories. And I think we have to find a new way of segmenting our audience and listening to them.
I couldn't agree more. And as we know from a chat we've had offline, how much that is a bugbear for me as well, trying to fit people into boxes without really truly understanding the nuances across ethnicity, sexuality, neurodiversity, attitudes, values, beliefs, drivers, cultural influences, so much more.
Absolutely. I think the other thing, we've seen some incredible results when people talked about just purpose advertising. And I don't think purpose, you know, I think representation is purpose advertising. But, you know, it kind of got lumped into this for a while. But I think when you look at businesses that are leaning into accurate portrayal, have teams that are representative, it doesn't just impact the stories they tell, the way that they connect with their employees. It's impacting product development. It's an investment strategies and how they're evolving as organizations. And it's telling when you look at the organizations that are succeeding, brands, agencies, tech companies, otherwise, you know, versus those that aren't. And I think that for me is around any business leader, any marketing leader wanting to build a sustainable future has to pay attention to representation. And it's really frustrating that certainly feels that when the economic crunch has come in, it's felt like DEI or representation was a choice, an option, not a must have.
I couldn't agree more. And as I'm listening to you, those benefits for brands that want to develop, as you say, for the long term sustainably, the benefits of representing will allow you to connect, will allow you to innovate, will allow you to be authentic, will allow you to have that understanding, the team feel reflective. But for me, as I'm listening, there's also an element of social responsibility for marketers as well to make sure that you are representing society as a whole.
100%. I don't know for you, but for many marketeers that I meet, one of the reasons why you get into marketing is definitely the aspect of creativity and storytelling. But personally, for me, it was about the fact that the work that we create and do has the ability to change people's minds. Now, whether that's about buying a product, educating them on something they should or need to do, you know, that's the whole purpose of using creative storytelling to help people live differently or live better. And I think that comes with social responsibility. It comes with power. And I think the fact is that if through the stories we tell, through the way that we connect with people, can do more to address certainly what we live in now in such a polarized society, but we could do more to kind of address that, particularly when others are failing. I do think there's a social responsibility. There's a moral responsibility that marketers carry. And I don't want to imply that as a burden. I think this is around actually what this means is there's a opportunity in whatever way, big or small, that we all have to improve the environment and society that we live in. And I think that's as a reason to jump up in the morning and get on with your job. I love it. Absolutely love it. Always have done.
I think that's a really great way of framing it. Not a burden, not something that we have to now do, another thing on our list, but actually an approach and a way of being and thinking as marketers to make sure that we are really reflective, representing society, but for the benefits that come with that, to be able to connect more authentically and bring that to life through our products and services.
You know, it's funny, I think of it as, you know, so it isn't a burden. And you're right, it does require a reframing of the mindset. That's how I see this. It's also when I say to people about responsibilities, about considering DEI in your teams as well as in your work, is if you approach it from a position of curiosity, and say, rather than this is something like, God, I've got to do it, this is another thing I've got to learn, there's another set of metrics, actually the opportunity is the broadening of your world and your experience because of the different types of people you get to meet. So the reality is, I think it's like Dunbar's law of how many people we meet, and we can only have 150 contacts in our world for each person in their communities. Well, if you think about that, and you think about, well, if I only ever surround myself with people who look like me, think like me, sound like me, etc., the challenge is we do get stuck in our echo chambers. And I think marketers know that their greatest talent and skill is the ability to be curious and to challenge, to see things from a different perspective, because that's when we're at our best. It's when we deliver our best work. You know, everyone looks for that killer insight, because you know when you find that killer insight, that's what's going to lead to incredible work. And you get to that by being curious, and you get the opportunity to be curious if you push yourself outside your comfort zone or your circle of familiarity and do that. So whether it's through the people you employ, the opportunities and places that you go into, or where you seek inspiration, and that includes partners and agencies, etc. as well, that makes a difference. And I've seen it happen repeatedly. As soon as you take people, you know, the group think, which feels ever so reassuring and comfortable, and at times we love that, into the unknown, which feels totally uncomfortable at times and a little bit scary, the better results come. And so I think rather than seeing it as a burden, and this is the way I've always seen it and I've always worked with my teams to see it, is we would see it as an exciting project for innovation, and we would see it as curiosity and learning. You know, it's learning rather than something that was another metric or another way of doing it. And I think that's when things would just flourish. You know, we always know human beings are at their greatest when they're in learning mode. So if you're learning and absorbing new ideas, new perspectives, new people, new cultures, whatever it might be, you're already mentally using the part of your brain that starts to get active and trigger ideas. Well, that's where you want to be. And so I think it's that, and then using all the skills to kind of assimilate and do what we do great as marketeers, stops it being a burden and starts it being other things that you can actually label and decide where they sit in your mind, your team's mind, wherever, you know, whether it's learning, whether it's curiosity, whether it's research, etc. And I think if people could see this, like we see technology, industry, we get so excited about every new piece of technology, which is wonderful, right? It's good that we're progressive in that way. But if we could just see this in the same level of excitement, if I'm honest, I don't think the narrative around representation has been delivered in a way that's exciting. The narrative around representation has been delivered in many respects. It's been more stick than carrot, if I think of it in that way. You know, it's been a bit of a something to beat you with, and gets people motivated. Technology may come with its fears around, you know, keeping up in that, but most often it promises excitement, promises opportunity. And I think if we had always, and if we can reframe and talk about representation as something that offers excitement and opportunity and growth and all sorts of things, we might just see it differently.
I agree. And I think that opportunity for growth and personal growth, you know, I love surrounding myself with different people, and I am people curious, and I hope and want all our marketers to be people curious also. I think part of that also takes a level of self-awareness to acknowledge what you understand and what you don't understand, or unconscious biases that you might be carrying, and the understanding that you need to face into in order to close those knowledge gaps to understand other communities better. So you have the understanding, not what if it's like for you to be in their shoes, but what it's like for them to be in their shoes, and how they experience the world, how they think, how they view things, and the differences and diversity of thought that comes with that.
Absolutely. And I think that's why I love it when people term, you know, it's not culture fit. It's not about fitting in. That's what I did for years. You know, I was trying to fit in to cultures. It's when you talk about culture add. So how is this a person or an idea that's a culture add? So it enriches and increases your sense of awareness and understanding. That's when we have the appreciation. And I love the way you phrase that. You know, it's about being in their shoes, not them walking in yours.
Tell me more about culture add.
This was something really interesting. When we used to hire at Google, often there was a lot of talk about, you know, culture fit. You know, did someone fit the culture when you were considering them joining teams? And the reality, what that immediately does, I think this was something that really I found quite challenging initially, was it did for me resonate on the basis that is what I had tried to do for most of my career, you know, suppress identity because I'm trying to fit in to a culture. And I don't mean in terms of attitude or ability. I'm talking about really that sense of cultures are often created by behavior, but also by the points of connection. And if you're focusing on points of connection that create groupthink and create that sense of normalization against a set of parameters, then no surprise, you start to build teams and environments that become very similar. When you think about culture add, it's actually thinking about what difference, what alternative and additions does this individual bring into a team or organization? And I think that's when it forces you to stretch beyond behavior and attitudes into someone's rich experience and what they bring. And sometimes that's going to bring different behaviors as well. And it's about being able to embrace that. You know, it's not about creating an army that all behaves and operates in the same way. And I don't mean that you don't still the importance of respecting company culture in the sense of values and things, but it's actually about the sense of, well, someone may have a different way of operating and behaving because the way that they've brought up or the way that they live, that doesn't make it right or wrong if they're still living by the same values. And I think culture ad is something I constantly think about when I think about campaigns, teams, businesses, even what I fill my world with. I love music, and one of the things I regularly do and have always done, and it never feels like effort, I really enjoy it, but it probably initially did feel like something, like with anything new that you start in life. But I make it my mission to go and explore new music. So I almost don't like the algorithms feeding me more of the same of what I already like. What I actually want to do is go, what's the thing I'm never going to pick? Because that's the only way I then can discover new sounds, new artists, new movements, new genre. Otherwise, I'd probably stick in just the same place.
I love that. I absolutely love that analogy as a fellow music lover.
Yeah. And it's the same with books, isn't it? I love the algorithms for serving me things that I may not know about and it recommends to me. And that's great to a point. But I think every environment, whether it's your Netflix, your Spotify, whatever it is, there needs to be an element of the random. Like, utterly just serve me the random, not even what's trending, just serve me random. Because then I think that's what forces us in everything I watch, read, you know, like I say, with books, I think that's been a real push for me. And it is a conscious thing. It's like a muscle you have to work on because we all love to retreat to what we know. And I suppose actually maybe having 15-year-old twins helps me because they constantly take me into new spaces. And I like taking them into new spaces. But it's something that I have really learned has enriched my career. And a lot of marketeers I meet talk about relevance. And I think that's really important in life, throughout life, whether you're a marketeer or not. The pace of change in our world is faster than it's ever been. And as a marketeer and being able to connect with the audience, relevance is really important. So how do you stay relevant? And I think that's why all of these things make us better at our craft and what we do.
I'm sure all marketers listening are nodding in agreement. Going, yes, I want to be able to have a growth mindset, discover and experience new. I want to make sure that I am feeling relevant and up to date with latest trends and cultural things that are happening, both to learn and experience them, but to also understand them for our consumers, and want to have diversity of thought in their teams to better allow them to also connect with audiences. As somebody who is passionate about this, to those marketers that are listening that want to build those diverse teams and diversity in their thinking, but also making sure that they can build brands where their consumers feel represented, where do they start?
So on a people level, I'll tell you how I kind of first stepped into this on that level is, I'm sure this happens with a lot of leaders. And if it doesn't, there's ways of reaching out and seeking it. I get lots of women and men, but a lot of women particularly who reach out with wanting to be mentored or just wanting a coffee chat for some advice. And we're all too busy, in all honesty, to often do this. But I found for me, I would block out an hour or two each week, usually on a Friday, so I could do it over Zoom and I fit it in around things. And I would use it almost like as office hours. And so I would book two or three people where I'd have a quick 20-minute conversation. And there's a value exchange because I'm meeting someone outside of my sphere. These are people who might have kind of reached out on LinkedIn or through another organization or a group or somewhere I've been. You know, we've often been in an environment. I think if you leave yourself open in that way, someone will say, oh, I've had this idea, or I need some help, or I'm going there. It's too easy to want to do but not find the time. And what I have found is when I lent into that and say, well, actually, do you know what? It might take me a few months to get through everyone and I could spend all my time doing this, but I try and make an effort to see one or two people a week just for 20 minutes. And talk to them so I can help them a little bit, but I also learn something new. And some of those will go further, et cetera. So I think the people curiosity is kind of, there's that at the very near set, close to our world. And always it's a great way of finding talent. And intentionally, if I see someone's done something wonderful, I'll often, you know, give praise where praise is due, but always say, is there anything I can do to help? And sometimes people will come and say, well, actually, you know, do you know anything about this? And that sparks a conversation. I think the other area, as I said, you know, go against the algorithm in all the places you absorb culture and interest. So it took me a long while to understand this. I never wanted to read press that I felt was not for me, you know, that would anger me. And it was somebody who said to me, well, if you don't read it, you don't understand. And so I make it an effort to read perhaps some of the newspapers that I vehemently disagree with in terms of their approach and values and beliefs. but I read them because I want to understand, you know. And actually, I don't often read the story because it does really irritate me, but I read the comments section quite often in places because I just want to try and understand a little bit more about the motivators of people and why. And I know there's lots of kind of toxicity online, so I take it with a huge pinch of salt, but it still gives you a sense of, like, you can lead down curious areas. So I think definitely things like meet different people, enrich culture by trying new things, music, galleries, books, etc. You know, once a month, I'll go and see something that I'd look at and go, no, I'd never go see that, and think, okay, well, I'll go and see that. Let me try. And likewise with books, etc. And then I do think that piece of, like, what you've put into your feed, into your social media feed or your news feed or how you absorb, helps just build a bit more of a 360. And then the key thing, I think, as a way to do this is you've got to keep yourself honest. And like I say, for me, I treat this as learning. And the best bit was when I was able to be comfortable and vulnerable to say, I don't know. I think one of the hardest things for marketing leaders and for marketeers is to accept what you don't know. There's a fear, right? We're meant to know the customer. We're meant to know all the tools. We're meant to know how to reach them. Actually, I think the bravest thing is to say, well, I don't really know, and I'm not really sure, but I will keen to find out and know. So I keep myself honest by doing that and reaching out regularly or saying what I don't know and don't understand and finding people who can help me with that, often with some kind of value exchange that I might be able to help them. And I think that's the bit that when I was comfortable with accepting what I don't know, I became probably the happiest and the most enriched. And one of the ways I do that particularly is with the new creators, that creator economy that exists now. I think creatives, if you're a marketeer, creatives are your best friend, whether they work in-house or at an agency, and you love spending time with them. Certainly this was for me. But sometimes it felt a slightly impenetrable space in terms of their firm points of reference. I've had the fortunate experience of working with a lot of creators. So these organic creators, anyone, you know, who had an idea or a thought and a camera and would use platforms like YouTube or Instagram or TikTok and have started with their own creativity, tell their stories. And I've been spending more and more time over the years in that world, along with the creatives, but with creators. And that has really helped accelerate, I think, my exploration and understanding of different people, cultures, ideas.
And what I love as I'm listening to you is that by you saying, I don't understand, you are modelling and creating psychological safety for others in the team and around you to also say that they don't understand and giving them permission to go away and find out. And I don't think enough people do that. What I'm also hearing is that level of curiosity that you also have, but also commitment to learning and helping others to expand your mind. And I also don't think enough people do that either. And I know that's down to time and prioritization, but as you said, the benefits both personally and professionally are immeasurable.
Absolutely. And the two things, as you brilliantly summarized, there are one, personally for me, was wrapped up in imposter syndrome. You know, imposter syndrome means that sense of feeling a little bit wrong-footed or lacking some of the confidence, that self-assurance around some of the decisions you're making. Particularly when I was at Google, it was a huge amount of responsibility. You know, millions and billions of people were looking at the work we were doing. I really felt the pressure of that. And I think what that leads to is fear. So when you're fearful, you don't want to admit to what you don't know. You want to believe that you do know everything because you feel like you might be found out. As soon as I got comfortable with the idea that actually it was perfectly okay to not be okay in understanding some of the things, and that led to growth, it literally transformed not just my time there, but me as a person. And I think the other one is we're all so busy. Gosh, you know, I totally get that. I have always had far too much in the diary. And that's when I talk about the reframing. I think if you can reframe these things as not some luxurious or charitable adventure, but something that's critical to the day job. You know, does this fall into the aspect of research? Does it fall into understanding your customers? Does it fall into insights or spending time with your agency or creatives? You know, I think if you were to rethink and reframe what some of this activity actually is doing and how you would therefore invest time in it, it might help with that prioritization. Because I agree with you, I think you get stuck in a loop. And I've seen it so often with marketers, and I was one of those people. You get stuck in the loop of chasing the to-do list, living constantly in fear of doing the best work you can do, and you are therefore stuck in a loop because you can't do the best work you want to do unless you create the time to go out and explore. You don't create the time to explore because you're constantly trying to chase to do good work. And you have to take a conscious decision to break that cycle.
I agree. And it's almost the thing that you want is the thing that you need to get. So if you want to inspire, you need to be inspired. You know, if you want to have a diverse thinking, you have to be able to experience and be part of diverse communities. You have to go and get the thing that you want. And as I was listening to you earlier, when you were talking about the fear of being found out or imposter syndrome, actually by saying, I don't know, it stops that fear of being found out. It's like, you don't have to find me out because I don't know. I'm letting you know that I don't know. And you're making it safe for others to do that, but you're actually stopping that inner voice from doing that. And I go right back to earlier in the podcast where you were talking about how you felt that you had to mask yourself and suppress your identity and who you are, almost as part of that journey of going, actually, I don't need to suppress who I am, and worried about being found out about who I truly am. If I take that away, not only am I going to help others, but I'm also going to be able to learn the bits that I don't know too.
Absolutely. And that permission and modelling the behaviour is so important. And I think if you're working for someone, working for people in your organisation who are incredibly busy and are assuming the position of command and control and unlikely to invest in it, sometimes it can feel hard if you do. But I almost again see it as a way of not only are you enabling your teams, if you have teams underneath you, and if you don't, you're actually enabling the people above you by taking on the responsibility to say, I'm going to go out and find this for us. And I think that's where you can take the permission. I always have this saying that I say to everybody, because I learned the hard ways, nobody is coming. So no one is coming to give you the permission, the time, the opportunity to do this. Sometimes you just have to lean in and go, I'm going to do this. And this is why it benefits the business, the teams, you, my boss, whoever.
No one is coming. I love that piece of advice. It's that can-do attitude of putting your hand up and saying, I don't know, we don't know, but I'll go find out.
Yeah.
So before I ask you career highs and lows, I'd love to know about that moment in time, if there was a moment in time, where you shifted from feeling that you had to mask who you were and your true authentic self to then going, no, I'm going to show the world my true authentic self. Was there any moments that led to that shift and change in your mindset?
Yeah, I think there was, like I say, having children was definitely for me a significant penny drop, because looking at my boy-girl twins, it just was so evident to me that had the world changed enough, and as you become a parent, sometimes you think, well, what's the world they're coming into? And I look at the two of them, are they still going to face a lot of the problems I faced? And in some respects, I think that kind of energized me to think, I didn't want to be, it's too exhausting to try and be more than one person. I really wanted to believe that they wouldn't have that. So I think there was a motivation definitely around it. There was also an environment. So when I moved to Google, this was the way I've looked at my career and continue to look at my career and encourage everyone else to, is saying, I'm talking about myself at the moment, having hit 50, now 51, and embarking on a new career and lots of new other things. It's my second act, or maybe it's my third or fourth act, if I was to really sit down and think about it. I think we all have an opportunity of reinvention, much like Beyonce or Taylor Swift will have a craft that's consistent, but albums that allow them to kind of reform who they are. I feel for me, when I took the job at Google, I was at that point, my kids were 5 years old. I was utterly exhausted by the mask. Google felt like an environment that could definitely felt more embracing of different types of people. And I decided to go into that with the idea of I just wanted to be who I was. And it, maybe it was kind of early tentative steps when I first went there and then kind of flourished into to really feeling comfortable as who I am in every sense. I think the contextual environment had changed as well. The world felt more accepting and more diverse in some respects than it certainly was when I was growing up. And there's nothing that gives me more energy now than I see younger generations who really fully embrace their identity. I absolutely love it. Nothing makes me happier. So I think it's environment, it's personal circumstance. And I think it's also a very conscious decision that I had said the next album in Nishma's career or life was one that was going to be the truest to me. And that's continued to evolve, you know, in the decade that I was at Google and since then. And I think that's a good and healthy thing to do. But I think it's a number of factors that lead people to feeling comfortable with being authentic. And I saw it with the teams that I led. You know, Google created and I created a really healthy environment for people to be themselves. But the reality is everyone's on their own personal journey and it can't be forced. All you can do are create the conditions and the support for someone to feel comfortable and emerge as they want to. And one of the key parts of that is making sure that they see visibly and hear of references and stories around them. And that's why I'm so passionate about this constant role of storytelling, role modeling, demonstrating, elevating different people, different stories, because that's what gives people individually the energy to step forward. And I think for me personally, I hadn't seen it as someone who was just like me, but I had seen other women and other relatable stories that may not be identically like mine, but were enough for me to feel comfortable that I could step into my own. And I hope that I've helped lots of other people feel more comfortable with that, not just with the environments I've created, but perhaps being very honest and vulnerable about my own story.
I know you have. And when you talk about your next album, tell us more about what your next album is.
My next album is called The Glitter Sphere.
Woo-woo.
Yeah, it's so funny, actually. I had a few men who'd said to me, oh, it's not a very serious sounding name. And I curled my nose up at them and said, well, I doubt Apple was considered a serious name when Steve Jobs released that and many other businesses that I could phrase. So I thankfully have ignored their advice and lent into what I believed was right, which is proving to be exactly the right decision. But The Glitter Sphere is, without me giving kind of the business pitch, it's actually more, let me give you the motivation of why I'm doing this. As I said to you, I have been fascinated by the growth of the creator economy and these incredible people. A lot of the ones I've focused on have been women who are taking control of telling their story. And they play such a critical role in everything we've just talked about reflecting and representing and doing it their way. And a lot of them have gone on to pursue these creative careers and using digital platforms to tell their stories, often because they couldn't find their place or didn't see their story elsewhere. A lot of these creators are building incredible communities of people who are connected to their stories or what the messages that they're delivering, and are almost becoming businesses in their own right. At the same time, I meet lots of amazing women entrepreneurs. There is a significant growth in female entrepreneurs at all different stages, particularly actually women like me in their 50s as well, who've been tired of corporate life and want to change the world in different ways. And one of the things I see consistently, and I did some of this work when I was at Google, of working with startups and working with founders, was marketing and brand is a critical component to those businesses succeeding. And individuals, you know, I've worked with lots of individuals about developing their personal brand, their personal skills. And wrapped in amongst all of this is kind of what the AI revolution is going to do for all of these industries, whether you're a startup, founder, individually as we are as people and as creators. And I spent a lot of time working on AI at Google, was that actually we need to make sure that we understand and use these tools. But I'm a big believer of collaboration. And what I want to do in the Glitter Sphere is help everybody shine a little bit more brighter and think about how do I not only help individually those particular constituents of creators and entrepreneurs and individuals, but actually think about how I bring them together to grow. So whether it's matching creators with businesses, businesses with individuals, whatever that might be. And most importantly is to help not just businesses and individuals grow, you know, so kind of unleash the full potential of female creators, entrepreneurs and brands. But I actually believe that women have the ability to drive transformative change in our culture by giving them those incredible resources and mentorship and attract the investment they so rightly deserve, because we know businesses and individuals are just not being invested in the way that they should. So that wasn't the elevator pitch, but that gives you a sense of like, I really want to lean into powering the women and the storytellers that I think can make a meaningful change in our world. And to that, I will bring the heft of my brand, technology and investment advice and knowledge and communities and network to them.
As you're describing it, the song that's coming into my head is Shine Bright Like a Diamond.
Yeah, maybe it is. Shine Bright Like a Diamond definitely probably gives it justice. I think the other thing as a Beyonce fan is Cowboy Carter, her kind of current album, is I think the greatest demonstration of collaboration. So the success of that album is the way she's collaborated with so many different artists and moving into a totally different genre. We're talking about representation and going out into the unknown. This is brilliantly done by her. And I think that's, for me, what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to help people move into the unknown. But most importantly, I just want to lean into that power of collaboration. And I think that's where, in the past throughout my career and life, I've seen the best things happen. And I just think that's the intersection that we need to do. Hence, the Glitter Sphere, because the Glitter Sphere is all of these smaller, individual, wonderful, bright parts coming together to shine even brighter.
Love that. Absolutely love that. And as you said, throughout your career. So you know what question I'm going to ask you next, Nishma. Mm. What are your career highs and lows?
So career highs would definitely have been the impact of the work that I've had and made, and most importantly, the people I've had the opportunity to work with. When I was younger, someone gave me an amazing bit of advice where they said to me, I don't think I was a leader at that stage, I was probably an aspiring manager. It stayed with me over the last 30 years, which was, as a leader, you'll only ever really be measured by, and the only thing you should really care about is what people go on to do. And I think that's how I've led and people. So I like the fact that I feel like I've built an army of these wonderful people who are in the world doing incredible things. So they're definitely the career highs. The work, however, you know, getting to work with Marcus Rashford on one of the campaigns I did at Google, which really resonated with communities. This was all about this storytelling of an observation we'd made of search, which is the fact that we're very confessional in the way that we use search. So we often ask it some of our kind of deepest secrets or things we're a bit uncomfortable to ask someone else, from the kind of small and little things every day to really big things, you know. So it could be like, you know, how do I spell? What do I know? What does this mean? Through to, you know, how do I support my child coming out? Or how do I be anti-racist? Whatever it might be. A very confessional approach. People use search. And we told this lovely story working with Uncommon Studios to effectively say, it's okay to ask. Because if we ask questions, that's a really good thing. It's okay to ask, because the more we ask, the closer we get. I love this idea that, you know, knowledge led to connection. Anyway, we did this not with Marcus in mind at all, but I'd worked and helped him with some stuff previous to that on his Feeding Kids mission. And when I was talking to his manager about this campaign that we were building, she'd mentioned that he'd be interested in what we were doing because it talked very much to one of his really passionate points around asking questions. And hence Something Beautiful was born. And just the timing of it happened to be around the timing of the Euros, when there was the dreadful kind of outburst of racism against the players and lots of polarized debate in the country around players taking the knee. And, you know, it felt like you had to pick a side. Whereas actually what we could see in the Google search queries is more people were questioning, actually, what does it mean to take the knee? Hence led to a beautiful campaign that's continued to run in, not as a campaign, but as a movement around It's Okay to Ask. You know, we lent it to different groups, whether it was the trans community at Google, to London Pride, etc., who were using it as a way to open conversation. So I feel particularly proud of that. I feel very proud of the work that we've done over the years around training people with digital skills. When I left Google, we trained 1 million people with digital skills. A lot of those were women. Those stories still live with me today. It was actually a lot of the motivation that came behind the Glittersphere with those stories. You know, I always remember meeting this woman in our digital garage in Manchester, and she'd come in and she looked exhausted, if I'm honest. She looked really tired and exhausted. And she came in and she said, look, I used to be a secretary. I feel totally disconnected. I haven't worked for 10 years, 12 years, because I've been looking after my kids. But I want to learn something. And we taught her all different skills around effectively for her to be an assistant again. And it just by chance, about 10 months later or so, I was happened to be in the digital garage again. And she walked in just by pure luck, wasn't arranged. And she walked in a different woman. You know, she looked fabulous. She looked like she was bossing it. And I went over to speak to her straight away to say, well, you know, wow, you know, tell me what's happened in the last 10 months or a year or so. And she said to me, well, you know, I learned the skills. I discovered there's this thing called virtual assistant. So I started to be a virtual assistant because I could work from home. I then found loads of other friends who were similar to me. And actually, I've set up a business where I now recruit all of them. And now we're all virtual assistants. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, we've given this woman a new lease of life through just having the knowledge and the skills to do it. But what really shook me to the ground at that point, which, as I say, is a deep motivation by what I'm doing, the Glittersphere. She lent him into me and said, and I left my husband who'd been abusing me for 20 years. And it gave her the economic empowerment, gave her the agency to make that decision. And I think those are the moments when I link at career highs that kind of propel forward and make us think of do more. The career lows are related to my lack of confidence. So whether it was managing in a way that was driving a team too hard, because of my own insecurities, getting it wrong, you know, not listening, not reaching out, not doing all the stuff that I've talked about with you today, because I was prepared to go with the groupthink and just got it horrifically wrong. I think sometimes we get so hooked on following the data. And I think data is really important. I'm a big believer of looking at the data and seeing what can tell us, but I don't believe in not following my instinct. And that's because when I haven't, I failed. So I love all marketeers to follow their instinct a bit more. And some of my lows were, to give a more specific example, campaigns where I had either lent into too much what I believed was right and not cross-check that with others, or listening to people who probably had first-hand experience of it. So it was a particular artist I put on stage at a big YouTube event. It was just wrong for that audience. It was wrong for that target's, you know, who we were trying to reach. And I had done that classic thing of, well, I like this and therefore everyone must, which is the wrong way to approach things. And another was when we were developing actually the Black Pound campaign. And again, it was assumptions we were making. The Black Pound campaign was supporting Black business owners, encouraging people to shop with them, again, creating kind of economic power to get economic equality. It was just not thinking beyond the work that we were doing and the impact that might needed to have beyond just the obvious of driving more customers to them. Actually, there were lots of kind of social aspects that needed to be considered as well. So yeah, career highs are when I've listened, got it right, and supported others to achieve their dreams and goals. The career lows are when I don't listen, haven't listened, or I've driven people too hard.
I love that. And the clarity of the learning that you've taken from both those career highs and lows. And I have to say, I didn't know that you were behind that campaign, because I absolutely love that Ask the Question campaign. It literally is up on my top five faves. So I'm having a little fangirling moment inside of me right now.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, it's definitely one of my proudest bits of work. And I think not just because of the joy I had in making it with the team and working with Marcus and the agency, but actually just seeing the impact it's had. And the impact it's had is not about a set of metrics. And did it lift this and did it lift that? It's the impact it had because I know how many conversations it's helped. I know how many people have been able to use that approach and think about asking questions to be connected.
Just wonderful. And thank you so much for the time that you spent so far on today's podcast and all of the advice that you have given us. But we always finish with the following question. What one piece of advice would you give to marketers of tomorrow?
I think my one piece of advice to marketers of tomorrow would be to think about how you will stay curious and relevant. Build that into the way that you work from day one. And if you're not doing it now, find a way to adapt. Because that listening, that connecting with creators, creatives, people, future talent, that's what will make you the best marketer you can be.
That's a great piece of advice. And thank you again so much for your time on today's podcast.
Thank you. I've loved it. Love talking to you. I mean, love all the work you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you, Nijma.
Thank you for tuning into the Whole Marketer podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do like, follow and share. The Whole Marketer is here to support and empower you and your teams with the latest technical skills, soft and leadership skills and behaviours, and personal understanding for a successful, fulfilling marketing career and life as a whole. For support, resources and more information on how we can help you to become a Whole Marketer and build Whole Marketing teams, go to www.thewholemarketer.com.